Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. This is the sixth lecture of our series titled Trying to Understand Religion in the Contemporary World. The whole idea to start this series of lectures is that the times we are living in are having, as I have said earlier, a surfeit of proofs and a surfeit of distractions. Surfeit of proofs which lead us to God, make us accept Him, and once we start understanding Him better, feel that He works through us, from within us, from outside of us. So He truly encompasses us, completely covers us with His mercy. That's His initial love for the creatures He has created, and more so for the humankind, mankind, which is the crown of creation and has been given a status infinitely superior to whatever it is able to see and understand. So once we start feeling God, understanding God, the surfeit of distractions start making less sense, and though we would be involved in this world's activity with all its distractions, would be able to cautiously tread the path. The word caution here, if you translated it into Arabic, would be taqwa. And through that process, make our lives spiritual, godly, and create an atmosphere around us, first within and then around us, that is in the family, in the society, and wherever our activity reflects itself in the form of godly behavior. So this is what we are trying to do in this series of lectures, trying to work on those proofs based on the Quran as well as rationality, on the basis of aql, so that we come to understand better how the Quran takes us on the journey of guidance towards God, and then moves us forward after we have come close to God and started feeling Him. And this is a continuous process where we get closer, act at a higher level, then get more closer as a result of acting at a higher level, and then we move on and on and on. A real purposeful life being lived with the most glorious God, the most lovable God, the Rahman and Rahim, and thereby feeling this life to be a great gift of His, and therefore valued. And since life is valued, the giver of life would be valued more. So this is what is actually the purpose for starting this lecture. We have moved forward from the fact that we are animals, and as animals we have all those things which animals have of the physical nature, and we start using our physical capability much more early than our mental faculty, which slowly grows and is dependent on our ability to think and ponder and to use the word of the Quran to have faith in the unseen. So this is what actually makes us different from all other animals, the ability to understand what is beyond the obvious. The Quran guides us in numerous ways that this is what we have shown you of our science, such as I have spoken of verses about gravity, I have spoken of verses about the mountains moving like clouds, I have spoken about the verse of life coming out of water, I have spoken about mountains being stakes to stabilize the motion of the earth. All this has been clearly and without any doubt mentioned in the Quran. Today's lecture would be, as already announced, the flow of creation. How does creation flow? We have God now, and we would like to know, how did it come to us? Talking today, discussing today, what is the journey, both at the level of the physical as well as at the level of the metaphysical? What journey has been initiated by God, of which we are today the product of? When we go and look at the Quran, it is very clear that the start of the creation in the physical form is something which is from energy, and this can be divided into dark energies, matter and light. Here we have the verse. Alhamdulillah allazi khalaqa as-samawati wal arda wa ja'ala az-zulumati wan nur thumma allazina kafaru bi rabbihim ya'dilun. The first verse of the sixth surah Al-An'am. The translation: all praise belongs to Allah who created the heavens and the earth and made the darknesses and light. Yet the faithless equate others with their Lord. God is speaking of darkness as darknesses and light as a single, in the singular form. And there is the plural form. And in Arabic, plural is more than two. So he speaks now, praise be to God, to Allah, who created the heavens and the earth and made the darknesses and light. As we move forward, we understand, at least from what we know of today, light is one form which is capable of being seen by itself and has the ability to light things which reflect it. Light is the source, nur, which has its own intrinsic luminosity and is capable of spreading it and making objects which have the capability of reflecting it in a manner that we see them. We enter a dark room, there is no light there, we open the lights and there we see the walls, the ceiling, the floor, we see ourselves because of the light which is there. So there is one kind of matter which is dark in itself but reflects light. So that becomes the first darkness, which is obvious to us. But that is only one darkness. Matter, which doesn't have luminosity but is capable of reflecting light, as a result of which we see it. The second and the third would become dark energy and dark matter, which don't have the capacity, which they don't reflect lights. Science accepts it very openly, determining percentages for them. Dark energy something like 67%, dark matter something like 28%, and what we see of the world in the form of light and darkness in the form that it reflects light and can be seen is only 5%. So God in this verse says that we created the heavens and the earth, and we created the darkness, made the darknesses and light. So there is one way of looking at it in this sense, that the processes are just not about what we think we know. The processes are more intricate than what we think we know. We still are incapable of in any way finding out what dark energy is, though we say it is surely there. And on this basis, our science has grown. And we also for sure know that there is dark matter involved. We have given functions to them, allocated why they should be there, allocated the percentage basically, because if those percentages don't exist, the world as we see it today will not exist. So this is one thing which we need to very clearly understand, that we would not be able to have this world had there not been the two darknesses, which are very, very necessary for this world of light and darkness, which can be illuminated, to exist beyond what human abilities of even finding them. We know they are, but we don't see them. And even the most developed of tools which we have put for finding them have not been able to give us information in a physical sense about them. So we don't know them physically. So there is a very, very different dimension. Though it is physical, it is very, very close to the metaphysical. I want your attention here. Though it is physical, it is something which is very close to the metaphysical. It looks as if it has come out of the metaphysical, and the world of ours, which the Arabic is dunya, that is the lowest level of existence, that is darkness with a bit of light. Darkness with a bit of light. And the two other darknesses we spoke of, dark energy and dark matter, being till now incapable of being physically recorded. So we need to understand that there is a hierarchy of existence even in the physical world. There are things which are above our ability to physically experience, but we know about them through our mental faculties and our ability to find the ghaib without actually seeing it or asking it to be recorded. And that borders on the dimension where metaphysicality is obvious. So one step towards the process of creation. I am going to get more and more clear as we progress. Another verse, seventh verse, seventh surah, Surah Al-A'raf, verse number 54. Inna rabbakumullahu allazi khalaqas samawati wal arda fi sittati ayyamin thumma istawa 'alal arsh. Again, there is mention, I'm reading the translation. Indeed, your Lord is Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days and then settled on the throne. And then settled on the throne. This one verse. And then we have another verse in chapter Surah number 11, Suratul Hud, verse number 7. هو الذي خلق السماوات والأرض في ستة أيام وكان أرشه على الماء ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا. This again mentions about creation in six periods. Days obviously don't make a sense because the sun came much later. So what day we have today is a solar day. What day is meant here? There are other verses in the Quran that day is a relative term. Two other verses very clearly mention that. It is He who created heavens and the earth in 6 days, and His throne was upon the water. Here again, creation and then the mention of water in both verses. Summastawa alal arsh. And then He settled on the throne. When we go to what we would say, the periods of creation, it is something which is being spoken to us about the periods. If we can't understand them at any point of time, why is God telling us this? The very mention of darknesses and light was mentioned basically because we can understand that. And we did understand. Maybe in the middle of the last century that these two things are there. Otherwise we can't explain our present physical world, the universe, physical universe. So all mentioning of these things has a direct relation to us because it's Sudalil Muttaqin. Guidance to the God conscious, God weary. So when we see of specific verses one after another saying that we created the world and the heavens in 6 days, what do we mean? If you go and look at the diagram which has become very popular now, which is been put forward by NASA and giving a history of about 13.8 billion years of how this universe has come about, has as of now 6 stages which they mentioned. You can go and search stages of creation of the universe. You can go and search it and you will find the 6 stages are: first, quantum fluctuations. The big bang started with quantum fluctuations. Two, inflation. Three, afterglow patterns about 375,000 years ago. That would be 375,000 years after the big bang. Then we have the fourth stage, which is dark ages. Then we have the fifth stage, first stars about 400 million years after the Big Bang. And then we have the sixth, development of galaxies, planets, etc. The sixth stage. Now we come to the real thing here. There is nothing about life here in the sense we know it, biological life. 6 stages are over. The Quran mentions these 6 stages very clearly in both the verses. Inna rabbakum allahu allazi khalaqa samawati wal arda fi sittati ayyamin thumma istawa 'ala al'arsh. Indeed, your Lord is Allah who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days and then settled on the throne. Thumma, then. And again, the other verse of Suratul Hud, 7th verse, huwa allazi khalaqa samawati wal arda fi sittati ayyamin wa kana arshahu 'ala al'ma' liyabluukum ayyukum ahsanu 'amala. It is He who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, and His throne was upon the water, that He may test you which of you is best in conduct. Who is best in conduct? Once the creation is over, we have the verse of the Quran, we created life out of water. And There are so many hadith which show that his arsh means his knowledge. After creating the physical world, up to the point that life was not there, he mentions in the continuation of that verse, وَكَانَ أَرْشَهُ عَلَى الْمَا ثُمَّ اسْتَوَى عَلَى الْأَرْشِ. That means very obviously, after reaching a point, his knowledge started acting on water, and from it, it brought out life. We have the verses. I have already spoken of that verse where God mentions very clearly that he has created all living things from water. Life is the result of water being in a way changed, modeled, fashioned and refashioned to a point where it yielded life. This is specifically the knowledge of God. And we can't create life. We can't create matter. We can destroy life. We can't even destroy matter. Life is destroyable because it has been initiated in water. We have some control over it. What has come out of water, if you reverse the processes, it will die. The loss of that process of coming to life can be reversed. So, therefore, it is possible to finish life off, but not possible to destroy matter, because it was created at a higher level. An example, just transgressing a little, is like for thousands of years, scientists, alchemists, they would be called, tried to create gold out of base metals. They tried and tried, nothing happened, because it requires to bring about 78 protons and about 190 neutrons in the nucleus. That is what the nucleus of a gold atom is. To get that, what kind of energies you require is only possible in neutron stars at the time of collision or as a result of supernovae, basically inverting the stars and the core coming onto the top. A kind of thing which is not at all, I mean, imagining it is difficult, leave alone doing it. A neutron star by itself has a radius of 10 kilometers but weighs 1.5 to 2 times more than the sun, which is 3 million times the size of the earth. That's what we are speaking of. You think, you ponder, you look, guidance will come from us. This is 1400 years ago. And this is coming out of the same book of a people who hardly had any cultural, educational experience or hardly a written language when the prophet was born. The script had just come and they were having very ordinary poetry in it. There we see, and from that point we see there is a march of civilization in a direction which we can't imagine. Islam created thought through these verses, through the same verses. It's for you to think and ponder. أَفَلَا يَتَدَبَّرُونَ عَلَى الْقُرْآنِ. Why do they not ponder and think over the Quran? Are their hearts أَمْ عَلَى قُلُوبٍ أَقْوَالُهَا. Are their hearts locked to stop them from pondering on the Quran, the verses of the Quran? We have been created to ponder over them, and from that was initiated the movement of science. When we see Jabir ibn Hayyan, a follower of Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam, do the first processes of trying to define elements by numbers, what we now know as atomic numbers. He is considered in general the father of chemistry. The processes were this. Go out of the ordinary and think out of the box. Go out of the ordinary and think out of the box. If you are thinking out of the box, things will come to you. If you are not thinking out of the box, things will not come to you. You will start getting mundane, and by that you would be slowly, slowly limiting your horizons, and with limited horizons, you can only seek some kind of pleasure in what you already have. You will not have the ability to create something anew. This is what the Quran is trying to take us towards. So I was saying the flow of creation. I'm just doing the physical part of it first. Then I'll move to the metaphysical part of it. There is another verse. This is Surah Anbiya, the 21st Surah, verse number 30. أَوَلَمْ يَرَى الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا أَنَّ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ كَانَتَا رَتْقًا. Have the faithless not regarded that the heavens and the earth were interwoven and we disjoined them? فَفَتَقْنَاهُمَا وَجَعَلْنَا مِنَ الْمَاءِ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ حَيٍّ أَفَلَا يُؤْمِنُونَ. It's a strange verse. It's a strange verse. Have the faithless not regarded that the heavens and the earth were interwoven and we disjoined them and we made everything out of water. Will they not then have faith? Now it's strange in one way. God is saying about those who are kuffar, not accepting God, that have they not seen that this heaven and earth which you are looking at, two separate entities, was once one, what we call in modern science, the cosmic cloud, the cosmic nebula. From them, we had the heavens and the earth. They were together. But God says, have the faithless not regarded that the heaven, and that where will the faithless regard about the heavens and the earth being together? How will they understand that there is and was a cosmic cloud from which we had stars separated and then planets and human life which is capable of now feeling that they are separate? But God is saying the kafirin should know that. And that we created all life from water. Will they not then have faith? It points out very clearly here. It points out very clearly here that it is not just the mu'min who needs to understand that. We who are bestowed with aql as human beings, not as muttaqeen, it is at that level we should be able to get the bigger picture of the universe. It is the finer picture of the universe which would come to us as we become muttaqeen and then move forward. The basic picture of the universe and of life is supposed to be known to the kuffar as well. The verse is very obvious. Have the faithless not regarded that the heavens and the earth, that means it is something which can be regarded, were interwoven and we disjoined them. And that we made everything living out of water. Will they not then have faith? They should know this, and as a result of this, they should have faith. We who are mu'mineen have a big problem here. If at the level of kufr, as this verse addresses the kafirin, if these things are to be known, we should know it much more and more better after having faith. Or our faith should come through this process. That's what God is guiding us towards. This looks to be part of Hudar Linnas, this verse. A guidance to the people at large. Because Quran says both things. Hudar Lil Muttaqeen wa Hudar Lil Nas. Hudar Lil Nas at a particular level, Hudar Lil Muttaqeen at a higher level. To know the general creation of life from water, to know the general creation of the heavens and the earth from a common thing, the cosmic cloud, and then separation should come to us as human beings. Looks to be strange. I'll go forward and try to explain how it works. There's another verse which supports God's control of the universe. This I spoke about creation, now it's about control. God in the Quran gives both examples of creation as well as control. إِنَّ اللَّهَ يُمْسِكُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ أَن تَزُولَ وَلَئِن زَالَتَا إِنْ أَمْسَكَهُمَا مِنْ أَحَدٍ مِنْ بَعْدِهِ. Indeed, Allah sustains the heavens and the earth, lest they should fall apart. Indeed, Allah sustains the heavens and the earth, lest they should fall apart. And if they were to fall apart, there is none who can sustain them except Him. And if they were to fall apart, there is none who can sustain them except Him. What does this mean? This very clearly means that it's not only a function of creation, it is also a function of sustaining. And nobody apart from God can sustain it. And as we see now, how things are moving and in what direction they are moving, and the speed of movement both within the atom, the energy is required to just to keep the protons and the neutrons in the nucleus, what we would call the strong nuclear force, and then the process of degeneration of matter through the weak nuclear force, sustaining everything from falling as a result of gravity through these two forces as well as the electromagnetic force. Our bodies, everything standing here is basically being sustained in its form and not falling because of the gravitational pull, basically because of the electromagnetic wave. Three, and then gravity in itself as a lesser force, universally spread and acting at the macro level for controlling the larger structure of the universe. This is what is coming out of a book which came 1400 years ago through a prophet.
Which verse was that?
The last one I read was chapter Surah 35, Fatir, verse number 41.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this is how it works. And this is how it should be understood. Now I come to the metaphysical part. How the metaphysical is joined to the physical through the ahadith which we have come to us through the Prophet and the Imams. The idea of what was that which was created first and how it was created, we find it in the beginning of Usul al-Kafi, which starts off with the book of Aql wal Jahl, intellect and ignorance. And we see one after another ahadith coming there which speak of how Aql was created. In one of the initial ahadith, it's not mentioned that it's the first creation, but it is the highest creation. And in the further ahadith, we have a mention of it as the first creation of God, of Allah. We have here Kitab al-Aql wal-Jahl, the first book of Usul al-Kafi, this is being narrated from Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam. It goes like that. Hala alayhi salam, lamma khalaqallahu al-akhla istantaqahu thumma qala lahu aqbil fa aqbala thumma qala lahu adbir fa adbara thumma qala wa bi'izzi wa jalali ma khalaqtu khalqan huwa ahabbu ilayya minka wala akmaltuka illa fi man uhib inni iyyaka amur wa iyyaka anha wa iyyaka uaqib wa iyyaka usib. This is the first hadith of Usul al-Kafi itself. I am reading the translation. When God had created aql, intellect, he interrogated him. Then God said to him, that's aql, face forward or come forward. So he drew near. Then God said to him, turn back. So he withdrew. Then God said, by my power and my glory, I created no creature more loved by me than thee, and I did not make thee complete, and I did not make thee complete save in one whom I love. Truly, thee alone do I bid, and thee alone do I forbid. Thee alone do I punish, and thee alone do I reward. This is the translation. So the first thing, there's another very famous hadith, Junud al-Aql, known as the hadith, Al-Junud al-Aql. The translation is available for that as well. I'll come to that. Here, it is being very, very clearly said that God created the intellect. And if I take the support of that famous hadith known as hadith Junudul Aql, where it says it's the first creation and it's the direct creation, it's the Amr, that it doesn't have anything intervening between it and God, that means that there is nothing there to intervene, so it becomes the first creation. This is specifically mentioned in that hadith. You can search it as well on the internet, hadith Junudul Aql. So you will find there that there is something like God consciousness in aql. Had it not the God consciousness, it would not have been capable of understanding and acting according to the will of God, as is known from the point that God tells it to come forward and it accepts it and then goes back. So it is able to listen, ponder and act according to the will of God. Further on, God says, I will not make you complete except for him whom I love. That means this creation is a work in progress. When given to man, and he starts fulfilling the commands of God the way initially is capable of fulfilling, dakhil, as is told in the hadith, come forward, it comes, go back, it goes back. So once it starts fulfilling all of God's commands, it starts becoming complete and more complete. So God says, I will not make you complete except for him whom I love. And love would be accepting the command. And as you keep accepting the commands of God, your aql becomes more and more stronger and capable of appreciating more facts. So it's accepting the commands of God which come to a man either directly through the process of aql itself There was nobody telling Akal to come forward or go back, right? That Akal understood by itself. There are so many things which Akal understands by itself. We don't need a Shariat for that. Anybody who accepts God or not would be very obviously saying, well, killing is bad, cheating is bad. You don't need a verse for it. When God says killing is bad, cheating is bad, it is only emphasizing what Akal already knows. What Akal already knows. What we are saying here, as it progresses, it gets commands through the prophets as well. We have a very famous verse here. In kuntum tuhibbun Allah fattabi'uni yuhibbukum Allah wa yaghfir lakum dhunubakum. O Prophet, tell them, if you love God, in kuntum tuhibbun Allah, if you all love God, follow me. That is, follow the Prophet. Tell them, it's my command, you're not commanding me. Again, the other words comes here. وَمَا يَنْتِقُ عَنِ الْهَوَىٰ إِنْ هُوَىٰ إِلَّا وَهِيُّهِ يُوهَىٰ. It's nothing but what is given to the Prophet through Wahi. He doesn't speak of his own accord, out of his own nafs, out of his own base desires. No. So what God says here, if they love me, they should follow you, O Prophet. And what will I do as a result? Yuhibbukum Allah. And God will love you. His initial love is automatic. His acquired love is through your works. He loves you and creates you. It's not the way other way around. He creates, he doesn't. No, he loves you, therefore he creates you. Your creation is already there before you get created. And with this, the interaction of the Alastu bi Rabbikum Qalu Bala also fits in. You are there with him before you are there in this world. And on that basis, he says, am I not your Lord? And at that level of consciousness, we say, yes, surely we bear witness that you are our Lord. So you would be loved by God. Yuhibbukum Allah wa yaghfir lakum dhunubakum. And will forgive you your sins. Why does it link with forgiving the sins? Once the sins are forgiven, your speed towards God gets more and more. It's sins which keep us back from accepting God. Once we move into that direction where the sins are being forgiven by God after our love of God, acting according to the commands of the Prophet, and then God loving us and forgiving us our sins. This is what it is all about. So the creation of the Akal, of which the soul is a repository, which differentiates us from all of the animal kingdom and makes us get the title from God of him being the best of creators. All these verses I've already talked of in the earlier lectures. This all comes in and gets a picture which is a bit holistic, has very, very limited chances of not being understood or having loose ends in it, and therefore we are capable of understanding the creation started flowing from in creation of Akal, intellect, and then through the process of the intellect the next thing started coming out. Because it is not for the intellect, it is baseless to create things which don't have a purpose in themselves. It would be only for enjoyment and going away. All this creation for a limited time of enjoyment for the animals and for us as animals doesn't make a lot of sense at all. It has to have something of a higher order. That higher order is that our creation, because we have Akal, is something which was there with God at the first step itself, beyond time, metaphysical in all its great glory, and taking off and partaking of the knowledge of God, and then coming into this world and being able to execute the will of God as the Khalifa of God. Inni ja'ilun fil arzi Khalifa. I am placing my Khalifa, my vicegerent, my agent, on earth to do my bidding. This is what it is all about, and hopefully we can get into more detail about it. But I have just gone and spoken about the basics of how to understand creation from the point of view of the Quran, the Hadith, and the intellect itself from the point of view of reasoning.
وآخر دعوانا الحمد لله رب العالمين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. Alhamdulillah, Mujahid, another excellent talk, which more than held up to its billing as the flow of creation. I think with each of these talks, we all need to go away and ponder over it and think over it and digest it, because there's a lot of material there. I've got a couple of quick questions, but which relate to your previous talk when you were talking about the soul. And I think this is a common question you may have come across, which is, you can hear me clearly?
Can you hear me? Yeah, I'm still listening to you. Yeah, it's very clear. Okay. It's very, very clear.
Okay. So we talked about the soul before. We now, in this speech, talked about the intellect, and you said that the soul is the repository of the akal.
Yeah.
Right? Perhaps we can elaborate a little bit, but the other question relating to that is these words of soul, spirit, and nafs are mentioned, sometimes they seem to be like interchangeable. But can we make the difference between those three? Can we clarify the difference between the nafs and the ruh and the soul and the spirit? If you could just elaborate a little bit on that, please.
Thank you. And also, where does fitra come in this whole thing?
I'll include fitra as well in my reply. The basic thing is, when we speak of ruh as a pure creation, we find that the Quran says, وَنَفَخْتُ فِيهِ مِنْ رُوحِ. I breathed my ruh, spirit, into Adam. That's the Quranic verse. The nafs is the same spirit which is now with the body. The soul is a pre-existing thing, but now it becomes the nafs in the sense of having a body to it and interacting with the body, commanding the body, and also being at one level being controlled by the body also. So it has the flexibility of controlling the body, controlling the mind, and at times becoming the slave of the body and the slave of the mind. This capacity of its akal as a creation of the first kind is being moved into the man through the process of the ruh and becoming a nafs through the process of coming together with the body. In one way, you don't take it as a point, you don't take it as a particle, you take it as a wave. Right? At one point, it's totally before all physical things. At the fag end, when it's the nafs, it is at the last, most lowest level, And when it is moved by the nafs, what we call the nafs ammara, where the nafs is acting, the same room, under the pressure of the body and mind. And considering the world in which it is as the purpose for its creation. That is the nafs ammara part. Then at a higher level you get a nafs lavvama, which feels that no, I am not designed for that, and it starts feeling a way of penitent and contrite, and therefore moving towards a higher reality, and then slowly, 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 slowly feeling that it's been created for a really high purpose, and gets in its stride and works according to the commands of God, and at that point it becomes at the fag end the nafsul mutmainna. So these are the processes of the same reality, which is called akhl at one point. The word akhl has been not used as akhl in the Quran, though yaqilun, taqilun, the other derivatives of it have been used, where it basically means good sense, reason. So what actually was created was good sense and reason at the primary level, that comes down at the physical as a representative of God. The representation is not from the physical. The physical is to be controlled or will start controlling in a default mode. In a default mode. So the fitra is that original mode. I am coming to the fitra part. The fitra is that original design. Fitrat Allahi allati fatara nasa alaiha. The origination of mankind on the basis of God's own origination. Fitrat Allahi allati fatara nasa alaiha. The origination of God on which He originated mankind. So that is the fitra. Where it holds good, where it is not challenged by forces which will make it change its direction in one way or the other, or if I don't use the word change direction, it become incapable of exercising its strength in face of what it is facing in the form of desires of the world, working through hormones and then finding a space in the mind and then working in the mind towards the same goal. That is imma shakira wa imma kafura. So in the state of freedom, man has a fitra and other things which operate in another direction, and if he starts taking lessons from that, the fitra gets dormant. If it not destroyed, it becomes dormant. And once it's become dormant, the nafs-e ammara really starts working on us. And there is what the Quran says, Zahar al-fasadu fil barri wal bahri bima kasabat aydin nas. All turmoil, all disruption is created on land and on the seas by what human beings acquire through their actions. That is through their free will. So, fitra is the strength, the original design, and then we go away from that and not follow. Instead of becoming shakir, thankful, we become kafir, ungrateful. And as we become more and more ungrateful, the fitra becomes more and more dormant. And as a result of that, we come to the point of not even accepting God, as the verse of the Quran says, ثُمَّ كَانَ عَقِبَةَ الَّذِينَ أَسَاءُوا السُّوءَ أَن كَذَّبُوا بِآيَاتِ اللَّهِ. And the result of those who took sinning as their way of life was that they started denying the signs of God. So once you start denying the signs of God, you deny God. Sin leads to a state where a person starts doubting the signs, and once the signs are rejected, he starts rejecting God. So the soul, the aql, the nafs are one single line at the quality of it. The nafs is basically because it has that pure akhl, doesn't have the ability to in itself to transgress, therefore it doesn't, as we see from the beginning in the hadith which I quoted, when it was told to come it came, it when it was told to go back it went back. That it was totally under the command, but God says, I will not complete you except for him whom I love, That means it's a work in process. The best part of Akal being the first makhluk in the metaphysical sense is that it is a creation which has the potential of listening to God in all states, even in the state of the dunya, at the lowest stage, where it has a very strong pull of living and thinking separately about its own existence. We are capable of that. There it is that the Aql actually needs to be brought out from our inner realities and use all our, I have not spoken about one thing during this lesson where, because Aql was created at the beginning, all the process of creation is in a way intuitively available to it. Intuitively. It can seek it out. Therefore, the words of the Quran which I quoted, kafirin are being asked, why don't they ponder about the fact that God separated the heavens and the earth when they were in the form of a single cosmic cloud. I've read that thing. Have the faithless not regarded that the heavens and the earth were interwoven and we disjoined them and we made every living thing out of water? These two things are basically speaking of an intuition which has to be there with the kafir as well. The intuition because of the Aql being there and Aql being a kind of participant in the process of creation. Not through creating but through being an observer of it. So this goes back and this answer for this would be, I have not talked of it, this answer would be that we intuitively have certain things in us which come out of us as a result of a particular effort on the same principle. Sciences have grown as the same principle. Had we not the intuitiveness, new ideas wouldn't have come to anybody. The very fact that new ideas come and science grows, maths grows, every science grows. Right? I mean, we can really move forward. We can really move forward. We speak of carbon dating. We speak of carbon dating. It's carbon 14. Right? With 6 protons and 8 neutrons. It has a particular age according to which it functions. It changes itself into 7 protons and 7 neutrons and becomes nitrogen 14. And this is the clock of what we say the biological clock. Any living organism which was alive can be properly dated to the extent of 30 years plus minus. Just because the way at the speed of which carbon 14 converts itself into nitrogen 14. Just by one neutron changing itself into a proton. This is what human beings are capable of. This has to be somewhere back in that intuitiveness through which we come to that conclusion and then work out and find it out in the real world. So that intuitiveness of human beings has an accompaniment in this. And there are higher verses of the Quran which say, خَلَقَكُمْ وَمَا تَفْعَلُونَ. We have created you and what you do. Quran, the verse of the Quran. We have created you. خَلَقَكُمْ وَمَا تَفْعَلُونَ. He has created you and what you do. So what we do also is a big part of that intuitiveness which God granted to Aql by creating it as the first metaphysical creation and then moved the universe to this point and we are able to partake of it and the process and therefore we go back, create math, create sciences, move into a higher orbit.
Thank you, Mujahid. Thank you. That's very comprehensive explanation. I think I can see Musa Bhai has got his hand raised. So do you have a further follow-up question?
So I have a question. In this all this discussion about physical and metaphysical, you know, the modern neuroscience says that the human brain has the executive brain, which is the prefrontal cortex. And there is the limbic system, which consists of the amygdala and the emotional brain. Now, the more we are in control of our prefrontal cortex, the intelligent brain, the executive brain, and the more control we have over our emotions, that's what is called emotional intelligence. It describes our prefrontal cortex is How does this whole thing relate? You know, akhal obviously is related to the prefrontal cortex, and the emotional jazbat, and they are related to our lower part of the brain. So, yes, go ahead.
I will be using, I mean, thank you for this question. For the next session, I will try to link the intellectual and the ethical, moral, to a single source. This question will arise. You cannot separate it. The moral as well as the intellectual are both on the same plane. It's through the same aql which we develop our moral understanding of things. And in that moral, you would have to add the emotional too. Our emotional states at times have moral ramifications. So when we go into that, we will come to it. For a general reply, I would like to say, the brain for the soul is like a tool. The brain in general for the soul is like an instrument. What all the brain does, the soul doesn't know. But the soul is capable of tapping into it and removing and accessing it for memory and correlating of facts. And we see ourselves doing it day in and day out. We tap our memory. Certain things we remember very vividly. Certain things we know we remember, but we are not able to get it. But after a bit of pressure, we do get it, and at times we don't. Similarly, our behavior, from the point of view of what is impacting the brain, our desires, right? Either as a result of our hormones or as a result of our social upbringing, create a moral world for us. The pressures on us come in different ways. The society, the system the society is following, all that adds to us. Now the discernment part is again the part of the soul. All that gets pushed into the brain, and how you use the brain to sift it and come towards a rational conclusion by following the fitra on which we were designed, and the akhl, which actually is the base on which the fitra is based. Therefore, it is being directly linked to God. Fitrat Allah illati, the origination of God on which He originated mankind. That means that origination would go back again to the origination of the akhl, the intellect. So, I think if we go a bit more into the detail, I will get into that. It would have become much more complicated had I gone into the act of how morals and the other intellectual, what we would call the sciences, the physical sciences, mathematics and others, how they are different. Yes, from the point of view of which part of the brain we are using, that are very acceptable, that the frontal part and the other part are separate, and obviously we have proof of that. But the brain actually works on at this end and at that end, and the funny part is, it is like our eye. It is like our eye. Whatever is around, because we can't see infrared and ultraviolet, we see our faces very, very clear. Had it been that we would be able to see infrared as well, our faces would have been looking very different to each other. So we have a vision which is particularly useful to us in our own way. Similarly, the brain does a lot of activity, which includes, what if I can give an example of the ultraviolet and infrared and the other rays, which we don't see. So as a result of that, all that activity happens, but what it delivers to us is the kind of vision which we are having. So it's something, the basirat is something like basarat. The insight is something like sight. As the additional wavelengths are not seen by us, and therefore we don't see ultraviolet and infrared. Similarly, there is so much more activity in the brain, but where we focus is that band, just like our sight. That would be making it, I think, somewhat more clearer.
Thank you, Mujahid. I think Ali Askari had a question or two. Ali, would you like to ask your question, please?
Azarbai, I'm here, Azarbai. Can you, you've got the text message, you can put the question, because I need to go back and check.
Okay.
Apologies for that, I wasn't ready.
Okay, so one of the questions that I had was, how is our ordinary soul, a normal soul, is it linked to the Holy Prophet and the Imams within the concept of tawassul and shifa? I know you mentioned that Quranic verse that if you love God, follow the Prophet, and then God will love you. I know you mentioned that Quranic verse in this lecture. But the question here is an ordinary human soul linked in any way to the prophetic soul or the soul of the Imam, which is why this concept of tawassul and shifa comes from?
To make it very simple, we will only speak of the domain in which we all are sharing the same platform, being at the same level, getting to a level where we are capable of interacting with higher level entities. I'll just put one thing forward. The Imams and the Prophets came to guide us through a particular process, which is basically giving us knowledge and becoming the best examples for what they are saying. That is what the Prophet and the Imams are for. Speak the truth and live up to it. Guide on the basis of what God has given them of guidance. What the Quran says, وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ أَئِمَّةً يَحْدُونَ بِأَمْرِنَا لَمَّا صَبَرُوا وَكَانُوا بِآيَاتِنَا يُوقِنُونَ. And we made them Imams. وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ. When we made them, this is about the Bani Israel, the Israelites. The verse before that speaks about the Bani Israel. So it says, from amongst the Bani Israel, we made Imams. وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ أَئِمَّةً يَحْدُونَ بِأَمْرِنَا, who guide according to our orders, our commands. So Imam guides only by the command of God. He can't do anything by himself. And as Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam says, we say what God has told in the Quran and what the Prophet has told through his hadith which we have. Had we said anything from our own, it would have been kufr of Allah. Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam saying that if I, as Imam Jafar Sadiq, would say anything which I have not got from the book of God and through the Prophet, I would be in a state of kufr. Leave alone me or you or anybody else. So they guide us through their own guidance, through the verse of the Quran which I am speaking of. When do they become Imams? Lamma sabaru. When they have fortitude. That means what they are doing in the world is not being accepted by others. Otherwise there is no need of fortitude and patience. Lamma sabaru. وَكَانُوا بِآيَاتِنَا يُقِنُونَ, and are sure about our signs. That is, they are in a state of yaqeen, state of complete, perfect knowledge. Two conditions. They should have fortitude to hold against what is the common flow of people, the common flow of events. Speak the truth from what God has told them, and then have complete faith in God and His signs. This is what they are. Now they have given what they had to give during their lifetimes to us. How they interact with us through the spiritual, I'll come to the very fact that how God interacts with us. If a person can become close to God, that's what we say, qurbatan ilallah. Right? It obviously means we are getting into a higher domain. And at the higher domain, what are the processes through which rahmat comes to us? Can be understood from the fact that inna arsalnaka rahmatan lil alameen. That rahmat of God, which had to be given to us through the Prophet and the Imams, would flow to us through that process. How it does is a question in itself. Whether we realize it or not, it is only a question of somebody who has his eye of the heart open to that level, might be able to understand how the mercy of God flows. For us common people, it would be good enough. We know that the mercy of God is flowing to us through what we have learned from the Quran and the Prophets and the Imams, and maybe for the good deeds which we are doing, maybe their prayer is part of what is happening to us, and the general mercy which God has pronounced and announced in the Quran is becoming and benefiting us in one way or the other. And maybe yes, the hadith which would be guiding us towards this kind of an interpretation. But I want to stay at the core.
Okay, thank you, Mazayan. Now this is slightly maybe a slightly historical question. You know, you mentioned how the early Muslims, the Muslims at the time of the Prophet, who were mostly illiterate and ignorant and didn't have much written matter, and within a matter of few years were transformed through the impact of the Prophet's teaching and the Quran to lead development and lead civilization. So how did that process happen? I mean, if we look at history, you know, after the Prophet we had the Khalifas, and then we had the Umayyads and the Abbasids and so on. But what were the major steps that happened? We know about Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, and we know that through his teaching we have Jabir ibn Hayyan in chemistry and so on. But after the Prophet, what were the main steps that happened that allowed the Muslims to lead the civilization?
I think we give too much importance to the political aspect of religion, which we shouldn't.
Mashallah.
The imams are our imams in all fields of life, just not the political. What we have done is, in our earnestness to prove that Maulai Muttaqiyan was the chosen person by the verses of the Quran which we put forward, as we say about the imams of the Bani Israel, which the Quran very openly says, وَجَعَلْنَاهُمْ أَئِمَّةً, or Hamne, and we have for sure, that is God, we. But the question is, it's not about just political activity, it's about basically also having guidance delivered to us. So what the Imams did after the Prophet was a huge activity in itself. The work of how the society should be modeled was basically the work of the Imams. And Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam or Imam Muhammad Baqir alayhi salam took from the Quran, the Prophet, and their earlier forefathers. So it was a continuation, and what came later on, 7th to the 11th Imam, was the same process. They are individual events which have taken place, but what we can know from the basic thing is that if a person purifies himself more and more, he becomes aware of greater realities. He becomes aware of greater realities. One of the instructions which is available in the Sunni world of today about Jabir ibn Hayyan being tutored by Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam, a book written by an Algerian author about 40 years ago, speaks specifically of this, and I'm quoting it from the same book, that Imam said, O Jabir, have pure intent. If you have pure intent, shaitan doesn't exist for you, because as the God says in the Quran, Allah says in the Quran, you cannot mislead my servants who have a pure intent, what we call mukhlisin.
Mukhlisin, yeah.
Right? And then God mentions it in the Quran as well, quoting shaitan, that he says, I will mislead all your servants except those who are mukhlisin, those with a pure intent. So these two verses the Imam uses and says, this is what it is. If you have a pure intent, according to what God says and in the Quran by himself, and then also quotes shaitan, Iblis, and mentions the same thing, that when you are in a state of ikhlas, purity of intent, you are in a state where the God, shaitan doesn't exist for you. Iblis doesn't exist for you. Satan doesn't exist for you. So this is what actually creates knowledge. You are withdrawing from the physical world into a world of a higher reality. The question now is, if Muslims don't do it, will God close it for the other people? God doesn't do that. If you don't take your chance, you want all others to be stopped from taking their chance? It doesn't happen that way. Quran has a very specific verse on that. Tilka al-ayyam nudawiluha bainan nas. these periods, these times, we keep rotating them amongst people. You take your part, continue doing it, we will keep rewarding you. If you change, we change. In Udhutum Udhna, says the Quran. If you turn back, we will turn back. In two words, it's over. In Udhutum Udhna. Simple as that. So what the problem which we have had is, we have not been able to understand what the Imams have given us. I'm speaking of this as Usul-e-Kafi. Just go through the translations. We have English translations of it. Through the first 20 pages and you will see your life changing, your brain containing certain ideas which never you thought would be the domain of a human being. That is what the Imams have given us. It is a funny part that we compare them to political leaders. To political leaders. You can't compare today's thinkers who are thinking on the lines of purity with today's political leaders. Can you? They are doing facade. They are creating turmoil in the world. And they are people of all religions, maybe a few, who are trying to do the other side of it. Just the opposite of it. Can both of them be the same? But the funny part is, we are doing this with the Imams. We are comparing them with the Fusaq and saying the Fusaq are bad and the Imams are good. And what about us following them? That has become a non-issue. That has become a non-issue. Their efforts for us have become a non-issue. Now that we have to put them on the pedestal of Khilafat in the past, that is our effort. And we are all having a roller coaster ride. Maybe we will succeed in destroying ourselves. Maybe.
Thank you, Mujahid. I think Irshad has got his hand up. Irshad, do you have a question?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum, Mawlana Mujahid. This is Irshad Bhai. It's a simple, very simple and basic question. We tend to use the word soul and spirit at different times. Can you give us the difference between the two?
See, when we see ourselves, right, we are not at a constant level. At times when we are in prayer, our prayers are also not at a constant level. They have their highs and lows. Except it. The spirit, as I told you, the ruh, which God says, I'm breathing it into Adam, is the same aql, the same soul, which we all have. When it gets linked to the body, it has a challenge in itself. It has an instrument in its hand. It's like it has a plane in its hand. It needs to use it to fly to the right destination by controlling it. But at a point of time, being with it, the plane gets out of control. So now that which is supposed to carry the person to a particular point destroys itself and destroys the person. This is what we are speaking of. And in that, we find different stages and different ups and downs within ourselves. Our nafs is not at one point. At times it is at the best point. I mean, you can understand it very simply. At times you are at the peak of it and somebody says something bad to you, you will not react. You will not react. You will say, no, I need not react. Ibadur Rahman yamshona ala al-arzi hauna. The servants of Rahman walk humbly on earth, and when the ignorant talk to them, they just reply, may peace be upon you. This is what the state is. I mean, they say something bad, the response from the servants of the Rahman is, halu salama. So when we are at a higher stage, we might not respond to a person who has used a bad word against us, or has said something wrong to us. At another level, somebody has said nothing bad to us at all, but we become so sensitive that something spoken with no intent at all, we misinterpret it and take or we react to it. Take affront and react to it. Why do we do that? We are the same person. We do it basically because our states are fluctuating states. This fluctuation needs to be understood. These vibrations need to be understood. Can we bring it into a stable condition? where the good only would be sustained and what we see as less than good would be slowly driven out. We have this feeling. This is the nafs. This is the soul. This is the akhl. But again, as I told you, from the point of view of creation, there was no nafs there because there was no matter there. But once put in the body, nafaqtu fihi min ruhi, the spirit, the soul, the akhl, all come to this point. And we don't find 2, 3, 4 things at all. Had it been nafs something bad, it shouldn't have become nafsul mutmain. That state of the body, soul complex we are speaking of is being praised and at one point said to be nafsul ammara. Inna nafsa la ammara tum bisu, says the Quran. Quoting the prophet Joseph, Yusuf, he says, I don't say I am pure and I don't say that I am above blame, because the nafs surely orders to words evil. That's how it is. So we are having those ups and downs, but very clearly that at times you keep fluctuating from the good and bad. You want to do something good, it becomes too difficult. So you choose the lesser path. The Quran goes back and says, repel evil with good, but it is not possible except for one whom we have granted a big share. What is this big share? That is the share of guidance, of hikmah, of wisdom. If wisdom is there, he will be able to repel evil with good. If the wisdom is not there, he won't be able to repel evil with good. So this state of having knowledge and acting accordingly, you may have knowledge at times, but you are not able to act accordingly. I spoke about the akratic condition which human beings have. They know the truth, but they can't follow it. That is the whole question. I think I am trying to answer. I don't know whether.
Yeah.
I spoke about flow of
what I understand. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. What I understand is everybody has been given a spirit when they are born, and according to your, you know, how you live your life, you create a soul, which is the polished form of the spirit.
There is no metamorphosis happening anywhere. Do you feel that metamorphosis is happening apart from the fact that something capable of doing good as it has been designed according to the fitra is doing good, and if it's not doing it, it gets into the mode of evil. That's what it is, right? There is no point of metamorphosis in that. Though the qualitatively, if you look at it, it would be a different. Qualitatively, it will be different. One going towards hell.
And the end result of the spirit, what happens to the spirit?
Yeah. As I told you.
And that be, and then when we leave this world, the soul goes with whatever qualities or, you know, evil things you've done, and that becomes a soul which would be judged.
Yeah, we have in the Quran the purgatory.
Do I understand it right?
Yeah, in the after death we have the state which what we call barzakh, purgatory, and then the final day of judgment is spoken of as qiyamah, right? The day of judgment, and that is going to be a separate. We will get into all this one after another about
inshallah.
The purgatory, about inshallah, qiyamah, what is meant by it, what it is for. This has to all get linked to one another. What we are trying to get is, we are at the very basic beginning where we are trying to understand what has happened before us to the point that we have come and where we are now and what we can do now. How that will impact itself in the longer run, we will have to clarify. Just like a hint here and there on moral issues which I am doing, which is not my real purpose as of now. I am just hinting it because it's interlinked. One question. Did I somehow, I mean, I was flowing, but what the flow of creation, I mean, did it carry or not? I'm asking you, Azarbai, specifically.
Yes, it did. I mean, at a very higher level, you know, how you linked the Quranic verses which talk about 6 days, which, as you said, is not the same as the solar day, and how you link that with the what NASA has identified as 6 stages over the 13.8 billion years that you mentioned. So I think in a very macro level, you've explained the flow of creation. The thing that you probably haven't touched, just thinking aloud, is evolution from the basic life structure to the complex biologically, the complex structure that we have as a human being. I think that part of the flow of creation, I don't know whether that should be part of
it.
But
yeah, I did mention it passingly in the last lecture, that when it comes to the animal part of us, the Quran says we are like all other communities of animals. There's a verse in the Quran which I had quoted during the fifth lecture, the last lecture, that communities like all other animals, and there is no difference between them and you from that point of view, apart from the fact that you have been given a soul, and that soul is capable of knowing just not what is in front of you, but the ghaib, and the ghaib can include the creation of the universe as well, and getting into more details of it as well through intuitions, and that leads what we call the science and the civilization of the human being. I did mention it in that format. We can go further into it using what Darwin said and what is presently known, and I don't take it seriously, because Darwinian concept of evolution from the point of view of natural selection has been challenged and thrown out by biologists themselves, evolutionary biologists themselves. The question is whether we have not come from a single cell. The question is, we have. There is no doubt about it. The question of speciation is being specifically mentioned in the Quran. You are like any other community, and we know that all communities one after another came forward. Right. And the fact that we have a DNA which is 98% same with a chimpanzee doesn't, I mean, leave any ground. There is no, and this has nothing to do with Darwin.
Right.
This has nothing to do with Darwin. He was speaking about certain kind of systems which develop, how life develops, where there is more water and the right kind of temperature, from how he worked in the Indian Ocean island, and that is what he speaks of. If he had not been there, these questions are still there, and they had to be answered and will be answered.
But the quality of the DNA, you know, the quality of the DNA that we have, as you said, is 98% identical to a chimpanzee.
Yeah.
If you run it back to, let's say, an amoeba, or, you know, one of the first creations, wasn't the DNA different for the early creatures? And then the DNA itself developed.
See, anything, when it is evolving, is basically evolving as a result of a process which is available to it. The process needs to be available to it. Therefore, it evolves. It's like you're owning a stove where there is no oxygen, it won't light. Because fire requires oxygen to burn. Right? So the process is there. It looks that I have lit the fire, but the question is that the air is there. This process is there before it. We need to understand what processes were available to the first microbe. Second, the whole idea of asexual reproduction, again, which is not as simple as two things breaking away, because the nucleus has to be separated.
Right.
The cell, and that requires like a billion reactions after billion reactions. It's not just billion reactions. It's continuously billions reactions after billion reactions. And that is what I say, the process is there. So it has to be there for it to happen. Then we move into the domain of the sexual reproduction. Two separate things developing in separate areas, being transported in a specific manner, and then growing. And had the processes not there been few hundred zeros, one, that process would have been defective, nothing would have come out. This has to be properly appreciated, the processes and the originator of the processes. We understand the physical better, the processes which lie behind it are not understood. That's what I call abracadabra science.
Yeah. No, thank you, Mujahid. So that was my only point, that you come in, when you talk about the flow...
We will go, if you want, into greater detail about it, inshallah, in the future lectures of trying to work it out. And I think the question and answers are very interesting. I mean, I'm thankful to all my friends here, my brothers here, push me towards thinking into newer areas. And please keep doing that and come with some facts from your side as well.
Sure.
Inshallah.
Thank you very much. I think we've gone over our time. But again, addressing the brothers who are here, if you want Agha to go into a bit more detail in terms of the evolution and the biological side, please let me know, or put your point on the group on WhatsApp. So I'll just end with a dua that, may Allah grant more and more knowledge and ability to Agha Mujahid to explain things to us, and for us to be able to understand it and act on it, and hopefully develop a more closer relationship with God, a closer relationship with the Prophet and the Imams. So thank you very much, Agha, again, and we look forward to your next talk in a couple of weeks' time. And thank you, everybody, for taking time out to attend tonight's lecture.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Azhar.
Thank you, Agha.
Thank you.
Thank you.